Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Our next topic is one we've discussed a number of times on this programme, always with huge engagement. And the accepted narrative seems to be that social media is having a negative impact on the mental health of teenagers. But an opinion piece published in the Irish Times today questions that, saying that the scientific evidence for that is not as compelling as some commentators suggest. Well, to discuss this topic now is Owen Whelan, a professor of business analytics and society at the J.E. Cairns School of Business Economics at the University of Galway, and Professor Matthew Sadlier, who's chair of IMO Consultant Committee and a consultant psychiatrist. You're both very welcome to the programme. Can I come to you, Professor Owen Whelan of UCG, first of all? You wrote this piece in the Irish Times today. In a nutshell, can you tell me what you're saying?
Yeah, I think you summed it up there in your introduction that we often have the assumption that there is a concrete link between the use of social media and negative well-being, particularly for teenagers. So a lot of that narrative is based on early studies, which did find a correlation between social media use and mental health problems. But it's just exactly that. It's a correlation. So we can't say that using social media causes problems for teenagers. So the emerging research that we have now is a lot better designed, and what we know is that the link between the two, if there is a link between social media and poor mental health in teenagers, is likely very small in general across the larger population.
Okay,
now,
we can say that social media, the use of social media for teenagers, causes mental health problems. That's your proposition.
Well, there's a better question to ask. It's not whether social media causes problems. It's why do some teenagers experience harms when they use social media and other teenagers have a more positive experience?
Okay. What research? Because I said at the very start that the narrative, the accepted narrative, it seems, is that social media for teens is harmful to their mental health. That seems to be what we've been hearing very often. 51551. Well, what research, Professor Owen Whelan, did you conduct or did you look at for this?
Well, we have some of our own ongoing research. There's some larger scale studies published in recent years. It's not really right to cherry pick one, but if I can, there's a study done in the US, the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, which is a large scale longitudinal study which studied 12,000 young people over 2 years and found that there was no link between screen time and brain function and mental health. And there's other studies like that as well. There's another study from the University of Amsterdam where they found that a small number of teenagers do have negative experiences on social media, about 10% of teenagers, but about 46% of teenagers, they use social media and they had a positive experience. So we all have a very different reaction to using technologies like social media, like smartphones. So what we have to figure out is, well, why do some people have those negative experiences rather than doing things like what's been talked about at the moment is bringing a social media ban as they're doing in Australia or talking about in countries like
Norway and Greece as well. In just a second. Stay with me, Professor Owen Whelan. I have consultant psychiatrist Matthew Sadlier with me as well. What do you say?
Oh, well, I fundamentally disagree is straight up. And I think the interpretation of some of the studies, I mean, the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, I mean, just Nagata published in BMC Open last year, showing that it did have a small but important effect in regards to depression, anxiety in young people. You have a report also from the same study which showed that for every hour of social media young girls used, it increased their negative opinions of their own body, increased a fear of weight gain, increased self-worth tied with weight, increased binge eating behaviour. The tie between social media and eating disorders, I think, has gone beyond being a theory and can almost certainly be concreted in. We've never had a situation before where people can put up pictures of themselves to be compared to by the general public, where we have young girls engaging in using cosmetic interventions that are designed for older people, using retinol creams, using, you know, surgical procedures at a very young age. Research that I've done myself with general practitioners show that 47% of a survey of 100 general practitioners in the Dublin area have at least once a month somebody attending their practice saying they have a problem with excessive phone use, either now, in fairness, majority it's an adult attending for a child, but have this phenomenon happening. Research that I did myself.
But before you go on to your research, does that mean it causes mental health issues?
Well, it depends what you define as a mental health issue.
The professor in UCG here, Professor Owen Whelan, is saying that we can say that social media use causes mental health problems in teens.
Well, I would strongly disagree with that because, I mean, it took years to say that cigarette smoking caused cancer. It took years to say that the HIV virus caused AIDS. We could argue here all day, does adverse childhood experience actually cause long-term mental health problems? Because the evidence, you can't do the necessary studies.
But are you saying that there is evidence to say that it does?
I think there's significant evidence to say that there is. There is a lot of very strong correlative evidence, and correlative evidence is critically important evidence. We have an epidemic of anxiety, depression, eating disorders, body issues, attention and concentration problems, not only among young people, but among older people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the adult effects of using the internet and social media is significant. And I would refer to the study in Amsterdam. That was a study looked at 63 adolescents who said that in the last hour, did they enjoy using the social media or not? And 46% said, I did enjoy using social media over the last hour. It showed, however, that they were using the social media for 31 minutes of an hour. Now, if we got in a group of people addicted to alcohol, and we asked them, did you enjoy drinking over the last hour? The majority of them would say yes. So the fact that this study showed the benefit actually shows how addictive these substances are. It shows how addictive that social media is. And we're getting reports of 11 to 20% of adolescents showing symptoms of addiction in regards to social media use. Yeah. And by that, I mean difficulties controlling use, use taking over other activities.
Can I go back to Professor Owen Whelan on that? The consultant psychiatrist fundamentally disagrees with your proposition, he says.
Well, I can't disagree with Matthew's perspective. He's dealing with teenagers who show up with these issues every day. What I would say, that when we use terms like addictive technologies, we have to be very careful about those terms. It's not just semantics. When we call phones or social media addictive, we're giving the impression that we have no agency in using these technologies or how we actually use them. But we do. We can decide when to use them and what way to use them. So it is under our control.
Could you not say that about alcohol as well? I mean, for example, I'm not saying you are, but could I not come on here and say, come on now, there's no need to regulate alcohol. Sure, anyone has agency over the amount of alcohol they use and the type of alcohol they use.
Well, the danger is, particularly with screens or social media and phones, is that if we start using those terms, we're going to pathologize everyday life. So people have to use their smartphones. A lot of people use social media for their jobs. So when you start using terms like that, we're pathologizing everyday life.
Okay.
And we're giving
so you're
the
saying
impression
they're not addicted to social media?
Well, there is certainly problems. I don't want to get into an argument about using different terms, whether it's addictive or not, but there is certainly people have problems.
I know, but
obsessed about the content.
Hang on now, because that's fundamental to the debate we're having here. Are you saying they're not addictive or not?
I don't think you can be addicted to smartphones. I am saying that some people do have a problem. They do overuse them. They use them in ways that is negative for their well-being. What we have to figure out is what exactly is that? It's not just the technology by itself. It's their personalities, their cognition, it's their motivations. They might already have underlying symptoms to begin with, and social media just amplifies those.
Okay, well, is that not a fair point, Matthew Sadlier, that in and of themselves they're not addictive?
They are addictive, and the generative algorithms are addictive. If you use the Edwards and Gross criteria for what is an addiction or what is a dependency, you know, you have primacy of use. So I use this over other important activities. And every parent of a teenager listening to this will say, yes, my teenager will spend time on their phone when they should be doing their homework, when they should be doing something more productive. They get withdrawal effects. Try and take a phone off a teenager and you will see active withdrawal effects. They have, you know, tolerance levels, usage of the phone increases over periods of time. We can go through all the criteria of dependency, behavioural addictions. Internet gaming addiction is a well-studied and validated phenomenon. Pornography addiction, well-studied, validated phenomenon. Addiction to smartphones and media and generative algorithms, a well-studied. Yes, we use terms. There is a difference, absolutely, between a behavioural addiction and a substance addiction. There's no doubt about that. They affect people in slightly different ways. But if you look at alcohol addiction or any substance addiction, it also relies on constitutional factors within the person, their life experience, probably some genetic component to how they process. So the concept that there's a nuance as to not everybody who drinks alcohol becomes addicted, not everyone who uses their phone become addicted, but we're seeing very high levels of dependent use of social media and phones among teenagers, which is leading to significant problems in schoolwork, leading to behavioural problems. And we saw, and there was a very good study done by a school in Kent in the UK where they used the internet pouches, which, or the pouches for restricting phone use, which for some reason has become a controversial topic in this country, and I cannot understand why, where they showed by using the pouches to restrict the use of the phones within school, they reduced truancy by 75%. They reduced detentions by 82% and they had a 12% decrease in teacher turnover. And also the pupils who didn't use their phone during the daytime said they didn't use their phone more during nighttime.
Okay, and there's a whole element, political discussion around the pouches, which I don't want to get into now. Can I come back to Owen for just a second? A text from a listener says, there is no break from them, the phones. It's completely different to how we grew up. And I'm 55, by the way, says that listener. And I just go back to your question about whether these social media apps or platforms are addictive or not. If they are addictive, if you allow for that, then you have to conjure with the messaging from the apps, which can be very often porn or violence or body issues. I mean, is that not obviously harmful then to a teenage brain that's still developing?
Absolutely, I agree with that view, and the social media companies have a social responsibility to do something about that. What we do know, and there's no discussion here, that there is harmful content on social media that is filtered to teenagers, whether it's self-harm images or graphic content, and absolutely the social media companies have a responsibility to make sure that does not get filtered to our teenagers.
But that's not what you're saying.
What I'm saying is that we have to acknowledge that a lot of teenagers do have a very positive experience when they use social media. So going back to the discussion about addiction, a lot of teenagers, they use social media and they don't find it distressing. They find it, you know, they get validation, they get social support from their friends. We have to acknowledge that as well. So if something is an addiction, well, why do so many teenagers get a positive experience from it? And again, I want to reiterate, I'm not saying that individual people don't have a problem with it or don't have a problem. They do, of course, and we need to really figure out, focus on those people rather than taking blanket initiatives which remove social media from everyone.
But are you focusing on those people instead of focusing on the social media companies that need to do the work in terms of the algorithms and so on?
Well, it's everybody. It's a multi-pronged approach here. It's the teenagers themselves have to do some self-reflection to try and figure out, well, why do I feel good or bad when I use social media? So, you know,
would you say that to an alcoholic, though? You need self-reflection.
Well, it's everything. It's everybody's involved in this. I'm just giving the example that, you know, not just teenagers, but ourselves, we're all using these technologies. So in some cases and on some days, I use it in a way that makes me feel bad. Well, I have to, you know, reflect on that. And well, that's not good. I need to do something about that. But also I can reflect and realize that in some times and some ways I use it, I feel better about myself. I'm after having a terrible day, but I was interacting with my friends over social media and it gave me some support and now I feel better. So schools have a role. Parents have to have that conversation with teens. You know, what exactly are you getting out of TikTok? You're after using it for the last half hour, the last hour. How does that make you feel? Yeah. Have those constant conversations.
And there's a text here that seems to support what you're saying. My 19-year-old spent 8 hours on TikTok the other day, had to delete it, says that listener. So maybe that's one person almost kind of underscoring what Owen is saying. He reappraised the situation, says, I need to get off this.
Oh, but see, the problem here is got to do with what we're talking about is children. Adults, different kettle of fish. But the problem is we have people of my generation in our 40s who didn't grow up with this stuff, who are engaging with it as adults who have developed mentalization abilities, internal reflective abilities, internal emotional regulation. And there's very good evidence that when preschool children or primary school age children engage with social media or the internet, they don't develop proper mentalization. They don't develop internal emotional regulation abilities. What we are looking for and what Australia has done, what France has done, what most countries have done is limit the use of these apps to people who are under 16. Allow people to develop their own identity. Allow people to develop their own abilities to have reflective functioning. And then, in the same way with alcohol, you walk out into the big bad world and you kind of pay your money and you take your chances to a certain extent. But the last thing I'll say is we don't let the alcohol companies put in the regulations for alcohol. We don't say to Diageo, what age should we allow people to drink at? when should they drink? Should they be allowed to drink on the streets or somewhere else? You know, the government does come in and put in very strict rules about alcohol consumption and about protecting children from alcohol use. And all addictive phenomenon, it's very similar. The younger they use, the more harm it is. And what we've only called for is the same thing that they see in Australia. And my final point, if I may make it, is
briefly,
Owen did say, be careful to use the word addictive. Well, New York State has passed a law called the Stop Addictive Feed Exploitation Act for Children. So the word addictive is in statute, you know, in the country that certain invented jurisdictions. Most of these things.
Can I give you a final word on this, Owen?
I think we'd be very careful about the language we use. And, you know, if we keep telling teenagers that social media is addictive, it's toxic, it leads to low self-esteem, well, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And no matter how they use social media, that's what they're going to experience. If we take a more balanced approach, yes, like Matthew was saying, we have to acknowledge all these negatives of social media. But we also have to highlight that there are positives, positive ways that can be used to help teenagers get validation and social connection and all the good things.
Okay.
So, yeah, we need a balanced approach.
Okay, let me read two texts at random to finish the conversation. I lost power and Wi-Fi in the recent snow. For the first day, I was okay. By the second day, I was knocking on my neighbour's door who had a generator so that I could use their Wi-Fi to check my social media. It's very addictive, even as an adult. And one more, I'm not a research expert, but I have three teenagers and phone addiction is definitely a fact in my house. It's a nightmare trying to get them off the phones at night. Problems getting them to study, to engage at dinner time, etc. Teens don't have the maturity to self-reflect. Says that listener to 51551. Thank you both very much indeed. Professor Owen Whelan of UCG and Professor Matthew Sadler, consultant psychiatrist.